Now, more Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Been a very eventful weekend in Major League Baseball. The World Series is now set. Coming up this Friday, we get Game 1. Saturday will be Game 2. And I don't know that you could write a better script. The two best teams in baseball, the Dodgers and the Yankees, will square off. First time since 1981 these two teams have met in the Fall Classic. And it just makes sense. We have Aaron Judge. We have Shohei Ohtani. We have Juan Soto. We have Mookie Betts. We have the two teams that have represented more than any other squads in baseball in the World Series, and now they get to share the biggest stage a year after the ratings were somewhat in the dumps for the World Series with the Rangers and the Diamondbacks a year ago. We'll talk about all that and more. Joining us right now over the phone, we have Steve Bordstein. Steve, it's always a pleasure to get you on. I can't think of anyone else I would rather have on this show Monday afternoon talking about the World Series. For all the storylines that I just mentioned, this just makes sense.
It makes sense, and there's already a poll out there on the wonderful wide world of the internet about how many future Hall of Famers are in the two dugouts of these two teams. Now let's forget for a moment that Clayton Kershaw is not going to pitch in this World Series. Okay, so that's one. That's one future Hall of Famer. Aaron Judge, Shohei Ohtani. I'm going to throw Juan Soto in there because I think that's where his career trajectory is going. Let's throw maybe Aaron Judge is going into the Hall of Fame. So let's say five minimum.
Well, you forgot Mookie. Mookie is a lock for the Hall of Fame.
Mookie, okay. Mookie's now six that are a lock for the Hall of Fame. And I can't think of a more recent World Series where that's been the case. Now, you can argue some of the players. You can't make the case for the 2017 Astros, cheating scandal. You can't make the case for the 2018 Red Sox, cheating scandal. You can't even make the case for any of the most recent World Series. This is the one, and it was sort of preordained maybe from day one of this entire season that this was going to be the World Series, and it's been a grind for not just the Yankees, who I think kind of maybe had their way of things in the American League, and I think that's going to be something that we can talk about here in a minute as far as, you know, the preparedness for this. But for the Dodgers, this has been a grind, and I can't think of another team in recent years other than maybe the 2020 Dodgers, maybe the 2017-18 Dodgers teams that lost the World Series that dealt with as many injuries, dealt with as many off-the-field things. Freddie Freeman with his child, Freddie Freeman's most recent ankle injury, the June and July swoon for both of these teams, where at one minute it looked like the Orioles were going to run away with the American League East, and the Padres all of a sudden made that big run in the National League West. All the injuries to the Dodgers pitchers that are still plaguing them to this very day. This has been a grind from day one, but again, this has been sort of preordained pretty much since the first day of spring training last March.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is why it works out so well for baseball. Okay, I'm going to, let's look at the NBA. Typically, the two best teams will make it to the NBA Finals. We don't see the upsets. There's not necessarily the variables that you have as far as the rotation and pitching, and one or two injuries can be catastrophic in the NBA, where one or two injuries definitely can become catastrophic in Major League Baseball, specifically out of the rotation. To me, getting Aaron Judge and Shohei Ohtani in the World Series would have been the equivalent of the NBA getting LeBron James and Kobe Bryant in the NBA Finals. And we never got to see that because LeBron couldn't hold up his end of the bargain, right? That's why we never got to see that. It is rare that the two best players, or at least the two most marketable players in a league, happen to be in competing conferences, competing leagues. It rarely happens that way. It also rarely happens that they get to meet on the biggest stage. That is happening in Major League Baseball. I'm trying to think the last time we had this in the NFL, right? Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, it was can't miss TV in the postseason. Guess what? They both played in the AFC. We never got to see that in the Super Bowl. I guess we got to see Mahomes and Brady once Brady made the leap and went over to Tampa Bay. But nonetheless, this is so rare. Like, we don't get to see this, where two of the most marketable players are sharing the biggest stage.
And I don't want to say that they were the most marketable players of the time, but as far as, like, massive MVP candidates, the last time I think, I'm just going off memory, the last time I remember we saw two MVP candidates, because, again, the MVP announcements don't become official till later on, but it was 2012. It was Buster Posey and the Giants and Miguel Cabrera and the Tigers.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and even with that,
that would be the last one I could think of, right?
No, I think you're exactly right. And even with that, neither of those two were global superstars.
No, they weren't. They weren't They weren't the most marketable guys.
No.
But they were MVP candidates. And to go back to another thing you said a moment ago, this is only the 13th time since 1969, when we broke everything up into divisions, that the number one seed from the American League played the number one seed in the National League.
So
the 13th time since 1969.
It's so difficult, right? It's difficult in Major League Baseball for the top seed. I think it's even more difficult now as they continue to expand the postseason field. It makes it even more difficult. Then you add in the variable of the top two seeds getting a bye. Like, this has just worked out beautifully for baseball. And what makes me happy about this World Series is I think over the course of 162 game season plus the playoffs, we have the two best teams. Now, I don't necessarily believe that these were the two best teams going into the playoffs. Difference there is the Padres were the hottest team in the league second half of the season. But when you take the collective unit of 162 games plus the postseason, we have the two best teams from body of work, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. And when you look at the postseason, I would argue that the Dodgers had a tougher challenge in the National League playoffs than the Yankees did in the American League playoffs. Now, that's by no one's fault. That's not some conspiracy thing here, but the Yankees and the Guardians weren't big issues, right? You know, the Padres and let's be honest here. You and I both talked about how we were. That it was the Mets and not the Phillies that the Dodgers had to face in the NLCS. I remember both you and I going, "Oh, we just got gifted here."
Yeah.
If you were a Dodger fan, you were like, "Oh, thank God! I didn't want to have to deal with Kyle Schwarber. I didn't want to have to deal with Bryce Harper. I'd much rather deal with the Mets." And it turned out the Mets were not as equal to the challenge, but they certainly had the players and they had the wherewithal to buck up, you know, in that National League Championship Series.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I also agree with the Yankees' path. And I said this going into the ALCS. Aaron Boone loses his job if the Yankees don't get to the World Series. And this is the reason why. You didn't have to contend with the World Series champion Rangers because they did not make the postseason. The Detroit Tigers spoiled the Houston Astros, so the Yankees did not have to contend with the Astros. That's been a nemesis of theirs in the AL playoffs. You didn't have to contend with the Baltimore Orioles, who were a lot of people's pick in the offseason after they made the move for Corbin Burns to win the American League. The Yankees did not have to go through the top three biggest threats in the American League. Now, on the flip side, the Dodgers, they didn't have to contend with the Braves because the Braves were completely depleted, but guess what? They had to go through the Padres, and you could have made the case that San Diego was the best team in baseball, playing the best baseball of anyone in the league when those two squared off in the NLDS.
No question. No question about it. And I would say that regardless of whether your listeners are picking the Dodgers or picking the Yankees in this World Series, I can make a case that if you're picking the Dodgers, you were going to pick the Padres.
Yeah.
At the same time, you weren't going to pick the Mets. You weren't going to pick them, but you were going to pick the Padres. You know, and I could have made a very realistic, as much reason or validity to be here as much as the Dodgers did. It just happened that it turned out the way it did. Now, thank goodness for us Dodgers fans that it did turn out that way, because I can't live in a world in which San Diego Padres are contending for a World Series championship. I refuse to live in that world, but we don't have to deal with that right now. What we deal with now is we have to deal with the other lingering thing, and you and I were talking about this just before we went on the air, is the discussion. Because the Roberts versus Aaron Boone discussion is going to become a hot button here. Roberts has been here, what, his fourth World Series now since 2017? This is Boone's first. Has Roberts learned from the mistakes of the past? And we know that Boone's going to make some decision in the middle of some game that's going to come back and probably bite him, or he's going to get revered for it. But he's never been here before. And as much as you can talk about, you know, oh, you got to make tough decisions in games, there's no other game that magnifies itself than a possible elimination game in the World Series.
No, you're exactly right, and it wasn't that long ago we were having the conversation here on this show. If the Padres were to knock the Dodgers out in four games, would Dave Roberts lose his job? I remember having the conversation that Dave Roberts is literally managing for his job. Now, I hated to have that conversation. I don't believe that that would have been justifiable. I just know the way professional sports work. Okay, so when we look at the two paths from these two managers, I'm going to start with Dave Roberts for a moment. For all the backlash, for all the negativity that Roberts gets thrown his way, I do not believe he had many missteps in the 2017 World Series against the Astros. I brought up the one misstep to you. It was pitching Brandon Morrow out of the bullpen for a third consecutive day when he had never done that. That was literally the only misstep in my mind in that World Series. He went with Yu Darvish in Game 7. It was Yu Darvish's turn in the rotation. You made a blockbuster trade to acquire him. He just got roughed up. Didn't fault him for that. 2018, they were not better than the Boston Red Sox. 2020, very difficult to get to the World Series in that realm. COVID was the ultimate variable that I don't believe anyone who tells me that was an easy or Mickey Mouse World Series, no, it might have been the most difficult. And now I look at the way Roberts has navigated this Dodger team to the World Series this year with the injuries. They have one starting pitcher that was a part of the rotation the opening week of Major League Baseball. That is absolutely fascinating to me, that Roberts found a way to get this team to the World Series, beating the Padres, beating the Mets, with three starters. One, a rookie who has never been in this situation. One, I don't want to call Flaherty a journeyman, but he's pretty damn close to it. And the other being Walker Buehler, fresh off his second Tommy John surgery. That right there is magical work from Dave Roberts, and he should never be questioned again.
I totally agree with that. I'm curious when we look back on trade deadline moves and free agent moves and what have you, especially trade deadline moves, would you have ever thought we'd live in a world where it was Tommy Edman and Brandon Kopech who ended up being the best bargains at the trade deadline? Because remember, everyone thought the Dodgers had to make some big splashy move, had to get some big name from some other team in order to have a run of the postseason, have a run of the World Series. And it ended up being two guys who, literally, I'd forgotten about Tommy Edman. I knew he was out there, but I wasn't concerned about him. And I didn't look at it and go, that's the guy that's going to carry us to the World Series. I didn't look at Kopech and think, oh, that's the guy that's going to get us into the World Series. I never once thought that.
I've been a fan of Tommy Edman just because of his versatility, right? Here's the more bizarre. This is even more bizarre, and this tells you how well Tommy Edman has fit in. Dave Roberts has used this guy as the cleanup hitter. On a roster that features Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, Freddie Freeman, Teoscar Hernandez, Max Muncy, and Will Smith, Tommy Edman has been batting cleanup in the NLCS, and it's worked to perfection.
Yeah, I mean, at no point in time, I remember when it happened. I remember they made the move, and I'm like, all right, Tommy Edman, cool. Like, all right, I don't know what he's going to do for us, but I never expected it to be Game 6, elimination, you know, a possible winner, you know, winner go on game or whatever, winner go to Game 7 in the World Series. I never expected that guy to be sitting there in the four hole in the lineup. Not once in my life did I expect to see that.
No.
So, I mean, that's decision making, that's scouting, that's front office stuff. And if you lose Roberts, let's say they decided to part ways after 21, 22 and the failures in the postseason. Let's say they decided to do that. You lose that management. You lose all that front office. You lose those people. Those people aren't there anymore, or they're going different directions. These things never happen. So, I mean, I understood the frustration of Dodgers fans. I did. I understood the frustrations of, you know, getting knocked out in the postseason 21, 22, 20. I understood it. I also understand Roberts was the only person, and his staff and his scouts and all his coaches, and Mark Pryor deserves a basket of muffins for the job he did in the patchwork that he had to do in keeping that bullpen and that pitching staff together this season.
We do have so much more to get into. We're going to continue to talk World Series Game 1 coming up this Friday. Again, Steve Bortstein joining us over the phone. More Drive Time Sports when we return. It's right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Sutherland Studios, continuing our conversation with Steve Bortstein as we preview Game 1 of the World Series coming up Friday. It's the matchup that I think everybody outside of Mets and Guardians fans wanted. We get the Dodgers and the Yankees. You can't make up this kind of drama. Let's flip and let's talk about Aaron Boone and the job that he has done to get the Yankees to this stage, because you make the argument it's the best division in baseball, right? So the Yankees win the AL East, and that is a fair argument. The Red Sox overachieved. The Orioles were fantastic. The Blue Jays, for all their shortcomings, it's a scary lineup. There isn't a bad team in the AL East. And Boone managed to maneuver the Yankees to a divisional crown. To me, that was highly impressive, especially when you were in a tit-for-tat battle with the Baltimore Orioles all season long. And let's not forget, it's not as if Gerrit Cole has been a part of this rotation the entire season. That was massively impressive to me. Obviously, Juan Soto was the missing piece. But one thing that Boone has preached all season long with the Yankees, and this is going to come into play in the World Series, it's where they mirror the Dodgers. The amount of quality at bats that this offense presents is why they are playing in the World Series, 100%.
Yeah, it's the two teams mirror each other as far as the way they approach at bats. They are patient. They are grinding. You're going to see 7, 8, 9 pitch at bats from both sides. That at bat of Juan Soto when he hit the 3-run blast to put them over the top against Cleveland. One of the greatest at-bats you'll ever see. Because at no point did Juan Soto ever look at a single pitch and go, oh, I can't hit that. He was waiting for that pitch.
Juan Soto.
What's that?
Juan Soto, as a member of the San Diego Padres, looked as if he was a fish out of water, that maybe we crowned this kid who was on a historical pace when he was with the Washington Nationals. He was on a historical pace. He was on track to be one of the greatest hitters we have ever seen in Major League Baseball history when he was dealt to San Diego. It's why there was such a hoopla around Juan Soto when the Nats decided that they weren't going to pay him. He looked like a fish out of water in San Diego. The Yankees swing for the fences in the offseason, they pull him in, and once again, Juan Soto looks like the $500 to $600 million man that we thought he was in Washington. And a lot of that, you have to give credit to Boone.
Yeah, no, that was an incredible move. And again, I remember watching that at bat in that Game 5 against Cleveland. And at no point, and the entire time, everything that led up to that. Remember the errant throw from the second base, from the shortstop, it gets away. And as soon as you saw Soto come to the plate, I immediately knew, okay, this is over. Right. He's going to wait for that pitch. That's what he's going to do, and that's what this team does. They wait for that pitch, just like the Dodgers do, just like you saw Muncy do, just like you saw Will Smith do, just like you've watched Betts and Freeman do, they wait for that pitch. The team that gets aggressive too quick, too early, that's the team that's going to lose this World Series. And that's why the Dodgers have to maintain that same focus. Do not swing at things. Don't try to be the hero. You don't need to be. The guy behind you is going to pick that thing up next. So just it's going to require a ton of patience for fans too, because fans want to see runs scoring, but it's going to take a little while for these teams to start rolling. But once they do, the offense is incredible in this series.
Okay, who's the, we'll both name this. This is what we'll end on because we have all week to talk about this. Give me the most important player for the New York Yankees. Give me the most important player for the Los Angeles Dodgers in this series.
Gleyber Torres.
I like it.
Gleyber Torres, because he's the leadoff guy. He's the guy. He gets on, It sets the table then for everyone behind him. It sets the table for Soto. It sets the table for Judge. It sets the table for Stanton. It forces the Dodger pitchers to now have to deal with runners on base. And that's something that we saw in this Mets series. Runners on base, that's a problem, right? Because they get a little antsy with runners on base. So that, to me, is the key player here for the Yankees. They want to win this World Series. Torres needs to have good quality at bats from the second he strides up to the plate in the top of the first inning in Game One on Friday night. He's my guy there for the Dodgers. Wow, the one guy, Will Smith. I'm going to say Will Smith. I need him. I need the Fresh Prince of L.A. to verify and justify what has been billed for him all along. He needs those quality at-bats. He made some incredible plays behind the plate, behind a bullpen that was at times very shaky. And there were a couple of pitches that if he lets them get away, you know, we have a completely different Game 6 scenario and maybe a Game 7 tonight. I think for me, Will Smith is my guy for the Dodgers as far as the X factor is concerned there.
For me, I'm going to go with Luke Weaver for the Yankees, and the reason why, this is why Shohei Ohtani bats leadoff. The Dodgers don't have to flip the lineup anymore with Ohtani leading off. Forget about the first inning. When you get into the 7th, 8th, 9th inning, all you have to do is get to your 8 guy. That's all you got to do, right? And then you are going to face Ohtani, and I think that Weaver has been stellar at times for the Yankees this season, but if you go back to the ALCS, the Guardians managed to take him yard a couple of times, and when he is firing, this Yankees bullpen looks a lot more formidable. At some point in time, Weaver is going to have to go up to decide a game. Luke Weaver is going to have to come out, and he's going to have to contend with Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and Freddie Freeman. And if Weaver is the Weaver that we saw throughout the regular season, he's the most important player for the Yankees. And for the Dodgers, I'm going to stick in the pitching realm. It's Yoshi Yamamoto, because Yamamoto should start Game 1. He's a $300 million rookie. He has been uneven in the postseason, but at times he's looked really good. The Dodgers are going to have to get 2 starts out of Yamamoto, and they've got to get 2 wins out of him. I don't worry about Aaron Judge. I don't worry about Juan Soto, Mookie Betts, Ohtani. These guys are going to perform. For me, it's can the Yankees get what they need out of Luke Weaver, and can the Dodgers get a number one ace performance out of Yamamoto? Because the Yankees are going to get that out of Gerrit Cole. Can the Dodgers get that out of Yamamoto? To me, they're the two most important players in the series.
When you hear the words home field advantage, everyone thinks of it differently. Everyone thinks, okay, you get out to a fast start, that gives you an edge. I look at the home field advantage a little bit differently. You need... And again, and it kind of goes this same direction. You win the first 2, there's no way New York can win it at home, right? That's obvious. You win the first one, you can tinker with things a little bit in Game 2 if you're the Dodgers. Even if you're the Yankees, you can tinker with things a little bit. Because if you're the Dodgers, if you're the Yankees, you win Game 1. You're in the driver's seat. You win Game 1. You're in the driver's seat. You can do whatever you want in Game 2 because you're going home with a chance to win it all at Yankee Stadium. If you're the Dodgers, you can tinker with things a little bit by winning Game 1 because Game 2 gives you the option of, okay, we know we can beat these guys, and we know that all we got to do is win 1 in New York to get it to come back to L.A. Win 1, hey, if you can, win 2 like you did against the Mets. Okay, fine, get it back home. I think that's where the home field advantage comes into play. The home field advantage has to be taken care of Game 1. Get Game 1, and you get the advantage, not just in terms of having the early momentum, which people will argue what momentum really is, if it really has some validity here or not. You get Game 1, you are in the driver's seat both directions, but you have to get that first game, especially, I think, if you're the Yankees. If you fall behind, if the Yankees fall behind in this series in Game 1, and then lose Game 2, they're not coming back to L.A. for Game 6. No, it's not.
In
New York.
I do not disagree with you at all, and it also gives the Dodgers the ability to do something that Dave Roberts did in the series with the Mets. When you only have 3 starters, 2 of which have been very, very questionable throughout the season, you can concede games, right? And don't get it twisted. The Dodgers conceded Game 5 against the New York Mets. up 3-1, Dave Roberts was able to concede Game 5, knowing that he needed to save his bullpen. Yes, people would say, well, why didn't you pull Flaherty at this stage, He conceded Game 5. Winning Game 1 gives you the ability to do that when you only have three starters. I think Game 1 is more important from the Dodgers' perspective because of that.
Yep, I agree. You get Game 1, it allows you the opportunity to do a couple of different things. I'll make this brief. We saw what this offense can do without Freddie Freeman. If Freddie Freeman's not 100%, let's say he's 95% in Game 1. Okay, all right, you win Game 1. Give him the night off. Give Freeman the night off. This offense obviously performed very well without Freeman in the lineup in Game 6 against the Mets. So you don't need him. Okay, give him the night off. That gives him Game 2 off. It gives him the day between for travel in Game 3. Now you got him back for Game 3 in New York, right? So there are things you can do. There's little maneuvers you can make with a lineup, with a roster, with a rotation that you can't do if you're down Game 1. If you're down 0-1 in that series. So I think it is imperative for the Dodgers to come out swinging against Gerrit Cole, the Yankees have already announced Cole will start Game 1. Dodgers have not made an announcement yet as far as their Game 1 starter. Who do you think that will be?
Yamamoto. It's got to be. You don't pay a kid $300 million to not start Game 1 of the World Series when you're missing four starters.
Yeah, that's okay. And you and I talked about this also. Bueller goes Game 3. I want him in the cold.
Yeah, that's right. He's been great in the cold weather. Absolutely. Yeah, it's got to be Yamamoto for the Dodgers. It's got to be. Plus, you put him in front of the hometown crowd, which is important as well.
Correct. So you win Game 1. That allows Roberts to make the decision. Do you go Flaherty Game 2? Do you go bullpen Game 2?
You go bullpen Game 2.
There you go.
And then you roll out Bueller Game 3, Flaherty Game 4. That's the way you work it.
There it is. That's how you play this. But if you lose Game 1, now you have to start tightening things up little bit. And that's where things get a little dicey right there. Game 1 is imperative for both of these teams. For the Dodgers, it's imperative. For Game 1, if Gerrit Cole loses Game 1 for the Yankees, they're done. They are absolutely done because by that point, that's their ace. That's their guy. And if he loses Game 1, he's done for when he comes back in Game 5.
Gerrit Cole is the biggest advantage that the Yankees have in this series. He is the biggest advantage because he is the only true ace for either squad. And if you give up a Gerrit Cole start, you are behind the eight ball immediately.
Right, and maybe he has an advantage in Game 1 because the Dodgers haven't seen him in months, blah, blah, blah. It's sort of that Sean Manaea situation. You saw what Manaea did for the Mets in Game 2, and then you saw how they beat him up in Game 6. I don't want to wait for Game 6. We don't have time to wait for Game 6. You need to know every single intricacy of Gerrit Cole going into Game 1 and beat him up early.
Going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait to continue to talk World Series again. Steve Bortstein joining us right now over the phone. Steve, before I let you go, what are you cooking on this week besides Dodger baseball?
I am trying to figure out how I'm going to navigate Game 1 of the World Series while I'm also covering, God help me, a high school football game between Bloomfield and Espanola Valley on Friday night. The coaches at Bloomfield High School have informed me that they will have a TV set up for me in the press box so that I can watch the game while I'm also covering a football game because they're better me.
Well, hey, this is where your problem lies. See, Emory High School takes such good care of me, they decided to be the number 2 seed and get a first round bye this Friday in the state tournament. They did that for me, and even if that's not the case, I'm going to roll with that, right, because they take such good care of me. So I will be home on my couch watching in a nice warm house. That's where I will be. I will not be out and about on Friday night because Emory High School took such good care of me and got that first round bye.
Well, see, that's why you're the man. That's why Jordan Buscarini is the best thing going in radio today, right there. That's the reason why. Me? No, I have to circumnavigate the road, because then it's the drive home, right? Because the game will be over the high school football game will be over 8:15. By that time, we're getting into the seventh inning of the Dodger game. Do I drive home or do I stay at Bloomfield to watch the rest of the game?
You stay and watch the rest of the game. You know what? I can give you an example. There was an Emory High School Richfield Wildcat game. This was 2020. It was right out of the COVID season. Remember, the NBA Finals were going on in October. And we wrapped up our game, and there were three of us that traveled for this. We stayed in the bleachers and watched Game 5 of the NBA Finals on our phone in the dark. All the lights were turned off, but we did not leave. We sat in the bleachers, and we watched Game 5 of the NBA Finals off of our phone, and it came down to the wire. You got to stay. I mean, if you're in it, you're in it, right? You have to stay.
Okay, all right. I mean, the game's going to be a blowout, the high school football game. It's going to be a blowout. It's going to be like a 30-point victory. I'm hoping it's a mercy rule halftime. You know, I don't have to really do, like, a lot of writing. I don't have to, like, do a lot of subjective analysis of the game. Look, such and such guy scored 8 touchdowns. The game was over by halftime. Boom. File. Done. Move on. Go watch the rest of the baseball game. That's it. That's my wish. Football game turns into a 14-13 slobber knocker, I'm going to be furious.
Oh, he's Steve Bordstein. See, these are the conversations we typically have off the air, but we're having it on the air today. Steve, we got to get you back on during the World Series. I really do appreciate you taking out the time. It's always fun.
Absolutely, my friend, because thank you for the time.
And with that, we are out of time on this edition of Drive Time Sports. Always fun to be along with you on the afternoon drive. In just a moment, we're going to kick it out to USU Eastern, where we will continue Meet the Candidates. Aiden Mortensen's going to take over for me in just a moment. I'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.